You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. On June 2nd, 2019, Walnut Creek resident Tawn Hall had called 911 to ask police to help her 23-year-old son, Miles, who was having a mental breakdown. Hall had a long-standing relationship with local police who knew about Miles' schizoaffective disorder and had helped the family before. But the officers who arrived at her home that day fatally shot Miles within minutes. Tawn Hall is now working to change use of force laws against people with mental illness in the name of justice for her son. She joins us as part of Forum's first-person series profiling local changemakers who make the Bay Area unique. Welcome to Forum, Tawn Hall.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So first, tell us about Miles. Like, what was his favorite thing to do?
So Miles is very vibrant. He was a wonderful son, a wonderful friend, family member, community member. And he had a lot of passion around music. So that was his what he was into before he passed away. So he was definitely artistic and very vibrant. I was trying to think of, like, what are words that would describe Miles? And definitely loving and friendly and very kind.
On your website, Justice for Miles Hall, he's playing a song on a keyboard and he messes up at one point and he smiles about it. What made you choose that video?
Well, I chose that video because I didn't have a lot of videos to choose from, for one, just because I think I lost some of my things on my phone. But I had that one and I was so glad I did, because it was at a time when he was kind of just, he was, I don't know. I chose that one just because I felt like it really captured his innocence, because he also created that song, and he was self-taught musician. So to me, I was like, this is so cool. I got to put this on the website.
When did you realize that Miles had something more serious than ADD?
Yeah, so I learned that pretty much right after he graduated from high school. And that was when he, I would say probably 19, he started sending, like, kind of texts that were kind of about Jesus. And then he ended up going to some of our neighbor's house and knocking on the doors and saying he was Jesus. So I had concerns there, because as an African-American male living in an affluent white community, I had fears for him. And I made sure that my neighbors then knew, you know, what was going on with him. I didn't even know what was going on with him.
You also made sure that police knew about Miles's condition. Why?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, again, because being African-American in a white community and knocking on people's doors, I thought that would be something that, you know, they probably might be called on anyway. So I wanted to make sure they understood that he belonged there. Mm-hmm. You know, he was part of our community. He lived there since he was 5 years old. So,
yes, you were acutely aware of internalized racist fears about
Absolutely.
Black men.
Absolutely, yeah. So it was more of for protection for him, so that then, you know, law enforcement wouldn't know exactly, okay, well, he belongs here, he's part of our community, and he's also experiencing a mental health crisis, something's going on with his mental health.
So when you called, I think it was just before June 2nd initially, what did you think police would do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I called because it had been 8 months since we had any contact with them. He was doing really well. He was had got a job. He was really thriving. So I called them because I'm like, wow, you know, something's going on again. I just want to make sure they were alerted. So it was more of, hey, just FYI, you know, you guys might get calls. You know, you might have community members who are saying, you know, there's an African-American male, you know, walking around, maybe saying he's Jesus. Or so for me, it was like I wanted to make sure that they knew again that he was having a mental health episode, and that my goal there was to make sure that they were aware, and if anything would happen, that they just understood.
Can you describe what happened on June 2nd, how he was behaving, and then what unfolded?
Yeah. So on June 2nd, I mean, he was just talking about he was Jesus, and he was, you know, really just fast pace. I mean, that's part of schizoaffective, I think, is kind of that manic behavior. So, I mean, I want to make sure it's very clear that Miles was not an aggressive person ever. I mean, that's why when you're a date, you have to make certain criteria to get help. And that's, you have to be a danger to self, danger to others, or gravely ill. So Miles just never felt, he never met those criteria. So it was our goal was to make sure that that we could get him the help, and it was almost impossible.
Ah, so you did feel like he needed additional help, but you couldn't quite get that help unless he met those criteria.
Absolutely.
But on that day, you thought maybe he did.
Well, he did meet that criteria because he was in a crisis, and he actually broke a sliding glass door. So we knew at that point, okay, well, this will meet the criteria for the police. Because we, in the past, I had tried to get him help, and they were like, oh, I'm sorry, we can't do anything. And so, or if they're able to get him to a hospital, then the doctors release him within hours. So it's literally almost impossible to get someone, a 5150, which is a non-hospitalization, so it will stick. So it'll actually, it will stay. Like, and they'll actually have to keep him. So when he was having that crisis on the 2nd, we had called 911. And it was, I felt like when I called that it was like, hey, we're meeting that criteria now. Come get him. So that was like my thought, right? But that was clearly not what happened that day.
So there were four officers. A fifth one came a little bit later, a mental health officer. And they found Miles in a street, I guess, essentially. They were able to locate him there.
Yeah.
What was Miles doing?
So I just want to explain, too, something. So after I called 911, I hung up the phone. I got a call right away from the mental health officer. So this is what I'm saying is that we had a partnership. She called me on her personal.
With the police.
Yeah.
From the police department.
From the police department. She calls me, and I had left her a message the day before as well. So she was aware, and she's like, I'm so sorry, you know, we didn't connect yesterday. So when I, you know, she called me, and she was asking all the right questions, like, hey, you know, what does he like? Does he still like music? How can, you know, what can we do? So I just want to explain that when I got off the phone with 911, I had this conversation with her. So again, I'm feeling confident, again, that the right people are going to be involved in his crisis situation. And so when the four officers arrived, they arrived on a very large cul-de-sac right behind our house. It broad daylight, 5 o'clock. And he had a garden tool, and the garden tool is what he broke the sliding glass door with. So he had the garden tool in his hand, but he was literally had it across his chest. He thought it was a staff from God. A staff from God.
Because it was one of those like gardening stakes that you.
Right. So he had it in his hand. And then literally within probably minutes of them arriving, the four officers, no de-escalation, no trying to talk to him. And that's, you know, you can, when someone is in an affective disorder like that, you really can change their behavior pretty quickly by just almost distraction or talking to them. But which is nothing that they didn't do any of that. So literally they come on the scene and they're yelling at him. They're demanding commands and he's running. He's running aside them. He's not running, with them, like towards them, like he's going to like harm someone. This is what I'm saying. This is not a dangerous object right now. And he was shot in the side. So clearly, if you're someone who's charging an officer, you would be shot in the chest.
Police, Walnut Creek police have said that he charged at the officers, and you have hired attorney John Burris, who I think had mentioned that, in fact, he was almost like, he used a football analogy, I believe. He was almost treating them like they were a defensive line or something like that and running aside them at mm-hmm. high speed, and then they shot him as he went to the side of them. Have you ever watched that body cam footage? They do have body cam footage of that incident.
So I have not watched it, but I do obviously have a lot of people who have told me you know, exactly what happened. My husband's watched it. My mother-in-law's watched it. My mom's watched it. So, I mean, I feel like we have the family, you know, consistency.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
not
yeah.
a question of
right.
Not a question for me of why you wouldn't watch it just to prove what your family members are saying. More just a question of why haven't you watched it?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. I mean, I've seen some awful still photos of him right after he was shot, or right, and it's just I have that memory in my head still from that. So I just don't. I don't want to watch it just because I've already seen that.
What effect?
I saw that one still photo, and I just can't imagine watching the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, he was literally, you know, in a crisis situation. When you call for help, obviously you don't ever expect that your child will be murdered in the street right behind where you lived, where he's lived for 18 years, or we've lived in that house 18 years. So, I think we had a false sense of security, and that's how I'm feeling, obviously, when you're in this situation.
What effect did watching that have on your husband?
I mean, it's really hard, right? I mean, it's his only son, and my husband's an amazing dad and very supportive. I mean, he was super supportive of Miles throughout his whole, you know, through the challenges that you have to deal with someone who's mentally ill. And the thing I want to make sure that it's clear is that Miles didn't understand that he was sick. So that's so much more difficult to get someone help when they are not meeting certain criteria. He can't just go check himself in and say, hey, I don't feel well. I don't feel like I'm not feeling a certain way. He definitely did not understand he was ill. So that's what makes this disorder for other families who are experiencing schizoaffective disorder so much more dangerous. And he had what it's called agnosia. I'm probably saying it wrong. But it's where, like, your reasoning, you just don't understand.
Yes. Plus, he was 23 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, he's
an
adult, too.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, though, of course, always your baby.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking with Tawn Hall. As part of Forum's First Person series, she's working to change use of force laws against people with mental illness in the name of her son, Miles, who was killed by Walnut Creek police when he was experiencing a mental episode. What's your reaction to Tawn Hall's story? What are your questions for her? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your questions or comments on Facebook, Twitter, at KQED Forum, or email them to forum@kqed.org. It sounds like this whole experience has revealed a lot to you about the system we currently have in place to address the needs that Miles had. What do you think is important for people to understand about this system and how it works and how well it works?
Yeah, well, I mean, the system is very broken. So anytime you have to use a police you're criminalizing your loved one.
You mean to get the actual help you need?
To get the help, right. Because for someone who doesn't understand they're sick and won't get help, really the law enforcement side is the way that we felt like was the way that we had to go.
Which is why you'd repeatedly built this relationship.
Right, and that's why I wanted to make that relationship. So it's definitely a broken system. What our goal is to do is to change the legislation because a family should never have to call the police to get your loved one help when they come with guns. And that's exactly what happened. They came with guns and they shot my son within 2 minutes. So we need to have a non-police response to the mentally ill.
Well, Michael agrees with you. Michael writes, we need a group to call other than the police, whose primary job tool is the pistol strapped to their hips. How about creating mental health crisis response teams? A few years ago, a disturbed woman was shot dead because she pointed a battery-powered drill at the police.
Right.
Mental health crisis response teams.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon, they have a really great model, and that's called CAHOOTS. And something like that would be really beneficial here in Walnut Creek. And that's something that my group, the FOSATH group, is friends of Scott and Tawn Hall and Alexis, are working to change. So we would like Walnut Creek to do a pilot program in order to meet the needs of the mentally ill, first in Walnut Creek, and then we want to take that throughout the state and then make legislation changes.
Scott is your husband's name, Alexis, your daughter's.
Yes.
Well, Sean writes, how can police quickly identify a person experiencing a mental crisis when so often violent behavior and crisis behavior can look the same to a first responder? Tonhal, what did you learn about how much training the police had?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because, of course, you learn this after the fact, right? These officers only have 8 to 12 hours of training with the mentally ill. So,
in terms of how to deal with somebody
mental illness.
Wow, that's not very much.
So it's not very much. So for the legislation changes are, why are we having the police come when they are not trained? So that's something that we're also asking Walnut Creek to do, is to increase their training hours so that these officers are more equipped. But I would say to the caller, how do you know? For one, you need to just pause and maybe not react so quickly. I believe if they had just stopped and just waited and let him run by, the outcome would be very different. But, they're so reactive, when sometimes you just need to step back and wait.
Let me go to Steve in Millbrae. Hi, Steve. Join us.
Hey.
Hi there.
A loved one of mine, mental illness, didn't really end in violence. Ended in another person getting hurt. And it really has to do with the police completely being ill-prepared. So the question is, are the police really the responders? Should there be somebody else? And if the police are the responders, what does the training actually look like? Should they get a master's in counseling? What do you recommend?
Thanks, Steve. In terms of how they should be trained, Tonhal?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like what they have now is not adequate. So, of course, you don't need to have a master's. But what I think what we would like to do is something similar in Oregon, is having someone who is a clinician type of person to be able to respond with police. So then you have someone who actually does have the experience in order to handle those situations. And that's what I would like to see as far as a statewide initiative, is someone coming in with the police and having a partnership. And I'm telling you right now, it actually has been proven that it's saving money doing it that way, because the clinicians, the way that they're modeled, they're able to reduce a lot of their costs. So really, as far as a department taking on something like this, it really could save the department money as well.
I understand that you attend almost every city council meeting, Walnut Creek City Council meeting, twice a month. What is your message, and what kind of impact do you think this is having?
Yeah, so it's not just me attending. So I do want to bring up the FOSATH group again. This group is of over 400 people who have stood by our family, our community, and are supporting us. And so it's me going to those, and I speak at everyone the first and third Tuesdays of every month. And our goal is to let them know that we're not going away. And my goal is to ask them for independent investigation. Because what happened with Miles, they put the officers on the street back in 10 days. Like, that is so disrespectful. It's so bad for family and the officers, that these officers who, took someone's life, my child's life, but they also took someone's life, and now they have to come back to work. How are they prepared? So I really feel like Walnut Creek needs to change their policies, and not just Walnut Creek. I feel like it's throughout the state that that these officers, the return back to work policies need to change.
And my understanding is the Contra Costa County DA's office is still investigating this case, is that right?
Yeah, it's still not closed. So now our goal is to get an independent investigation, because right now the way that it's handled is the the whole investigation, like the people are investigating each other. Like Walnut Creek investigated it, and then now the district attorney who is in involvement with the Walnut Creek Police Department are now investigating.
So you're not so sure how you feel about the Contra Costa County DA.
Well, I feel like we need to have an independent person come in. And I think that shouldn't just be here in Walnut Creek. That should be throughout.
And you've asked that of the Walnut Creek Police Department. You, when you're at these city council meetings, the chief of the Walnut Creek Police Department is often there, right?
Yeah, he's there too. So I'm definitely speaking to him as well. And I do want to say that they are listening. So I feel like I'm not saying that, you know, they're not listening. But it's been 9 months and, you know, we are not feeling like they're really taking it as serious as they should be.
The East Bay Times has quotes from the chief of police saying that he would provide whatever information you asked for to make this as transparent a process as possible as they look into what happened with the officers. And do you feel like you've gotten that?
I mean, I feel like I said, he's meeting with our FOSETH group, so he's definitely making efforts. But, you know, I feel like there's just a lot more work to do. And I, you know, we won't really know until we're kind of at the end here and we can see the strides we've made. So we ask them every time, you know, you need to step up, you need to help make change. And they can be trailblazers in their own city and start to be progressive. And that's what we're asking. Be progressive. Be innovative. You don't have to meet the status quo of how other departments are doing it.
Let me go next to caller Danielle in Oakland. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, I just want to say thank you to Tawn Hall for her bravery and her consistency and her absolute refusal to back down. I can't think of a single thing that she didn't do as the mother of a black son. Myself, I feel that if Miles had been white, this would have never happened. The fact that she was having ongoing conversations with the police and that this happened the way it did, that it went down the way it did, the power for us to change this is very largely in the hands of every white person across the country. We have to change systemic racism that's braided into our society, into the way we work and see and react to people in our community. Again, if he were white, this would never have happened this way.
Danielle, thank you. Tawn Hall.
Yeah, Danielle, thank you for saying that, and thank you, and I'm hopefully your son is doing well. Yeah, and that's exactly, you had it. You hit the nail on the head. It is racism, and we talk about that at the city council meetings. It really is. I mean, you can't say it's not, because especially if you, and I do urge you to look at the video, to look, make your own determinations about what happened. Because you're right. It is about racism, and part of our group, the FOSETH group, we have an implicit bias committee, and they are working with the city of police, the city of Walnut Creek, to also change some of their policies and procedures around implicit bias. So there's a lot of work to be done, for sure.
There is a lot of work to be done, and I remember it was more last year than this year so far, but just a lot of videos capturing how quickly police would be called in a situation that involved black people and how fraught and potentially dangerous that action is. And I think Danielle's comment is asking us to rethink that. Helen writes, I'm another mom with a mentally ill adult son. My son knows that he's ill, and I'm grateful. Thank you for doing this work through your heartbreak. I mean, Tawn Hall, there are very, very hard moments after the death of a loved one, and especially a child, and moments made much harder when that person died violently. And I wonder what has kept you so strong and engaged in this.
Yeah, I mean, I could go and just lay down and cry and be in my bed all day, and trust me, I have those moments. My fight is that he was murdered, and it was so careless in the way that they came and handled him. And we can't have this happen to another family. And my husband and I are both on the same page that we have to turn our grief into a fight. We have to turn it into change. My shirt, we have shirts made, and it says create change, protect families. That's our logo. That's our slogan. Is that it's not about just our family. It's about the future families. It's about the future Mileses. The caller on the phone mentioned that, you know, she's grateful that her son understands he's sick, but about 30% of people who have schizoaffective, they don't understand they're ill. And that is the most dangerous part. And that is exactly why we reached out to the police. And it's interesting because you get a lot of people who are like, you don't call the police, you know, especially the Black community. Right. And I understand that. But somehow you feel like you live in this a community where you're going to be supported along with the police for them to make the right decisions and understand that, you know, they have someone who isn't well.
Well, this listener writes, my family has had so much trouble getting help for my mother through the years. It's been painful having to criminalize her in moments of crisis. Our mental health system in California is the untrained police at this point. This is a problem akin to all the over-policing done against Black, Brown, poor, and other underserved communities. Are you saying, Tonhall, that you think Walnut Creek, when you say they're listening, acknowledges that they need more help and support in dealing with mentally ill people that they're called to respond to?
Absolutely. And that's the good thing, right? Is that they are listening. They are meeting with our groups, trying to see how they can partner to make change. So I feel like they are absolutely listening in that regard. So that's good.
Well, let me see if I can get Jerry in here. Jerry, we just have 30 seconds or so. What would you like to share?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this is a very moving program. I had a son who's white, and he had a very similar diagnosis and interaction with the police. And it was in Pacifica, so a similar kind of neighborhood, and it was a very different experience. I was very impressed with the level of support that he was provided. So I can't help but think this is racist, so what she's experiencing in this situation. So I'm sorry to hear it back.
Yeah. Jerry, thank you for that. Tonhall, for people who want to help or get involved, remind us again the name of your organization and how they can do that.
Yeah, so definitely I would start with justiceformileshall.org. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and you can see the things that we're doing. We have a great group of people supporting us.
Tonhall, she's a mental health activist, the mother of Miles Hall, who was fatally shot by Walnut Creek Police on June 2nd, 2019, she was nominated to Forum for our first person series on change makers who make the Bay Area unique. Tonhall, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mina. Appreciate the time.
And thank you to our listeners for their questions, comments, and stories. I'm Mina Kim. More of Forum is next. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.